Welcome back to Music for Life, exploring the purpose and value of music to humanity's enrichment. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. We are exploring the impact folk music has had on composers throughout music history. Antonín Dvořák, who we were talking about at the end of part one, he wrote a set of 16 Slavonic dances following the pattern set by Johannes Brahms's Hungarian dances. Dvorak's set was based on various Slavic dance rhythms. Now, Dvorak's most famous work was also based on folk music, but this was based on a completely different folk culture than his own. While visiting America, he was fascinated by the Native American and African American folk styles of music, and he felt it was imperative that American composers draw from these influences, as their music at this time was not distinct at all from that of its European contemporaries. He said, "I am convinced that the future music of this country must be founded on what are called Negro melodies. These can be the foundation of a serious and original school of composition to be developed in the United States. These beautiful and varied themes are the product of the soil. They are the folk songs of America, and your composers must turn to them." Those were the words of Antonín Dvořák. So he set the example by writing his Symphony No. 9, nicknamed From the New World. This symphony was influenced, he said, by Native American music. His melodies were to embody the peculiarities of the Indian music, and he packaged it within an orchestral framework. He noted that the music of the Native Americans, the African Americans, and the Scottish, he said, was remarkably similar, and most believe he was referring to the pentatonic scale, or the five-note scale, used prominently in all three of these folk cultures. Dvorak also said, "In the Negro melodies of America, I discover all that is needed for a great and noble school of music." It wasn't until the 20th century that American composers would start to follow Dvorak's lead in using America's folk elements to help American music find its own voice or to have its own unique style. Thanks to Dvorak paving the way, plus the help of another influential European, Americans started writing purely American-sounding music, and they did this by looking to the folk tunes and folk styles of America. This style in fine art music really began with Aaron Copland. Yes, Dvorak, a Czech composer, had broken the ice, so to speak. Also, the American military bandleader and composer John Philip Sousa played a part in it as well. But it wasn't until Aaron Copland that it really became common in American fine art music. Copland was studying in France with a composer by the name of Nadia Boulanger. This was just after World War I, and it was not in style for American composers to imitate German music anymore, given that Germany was the enemy in the Great War. So composers flocked to France for instruction. This influential French teacher, a composer of the Impressionist style, who taught many great American musicians from Philip Glass to Quincy Jones. She encouraged her American composition students to find a purely American style. Copland, while studying with Boulanger, figuratively looked back across the Atlantic at some of the jazz elements developing in American music. Now, his attempts to fuse this style with his concert music weren't as successful as he'd hoped. His music was quite complex for the average listener and nearly too difficult even for the trained musician to play. A little later, he visited Mexico and was inspired by the prevalent musical culture among the common people. he wrote an orchestral piece inspired by this trip using Mexican folk tunes, titled El Salón México. Here's a little of that. David Zinman conducted the Boston Symphony Orchestra in that recording of Aaron Copland's El Salón México, a piece inspired by Mexican folk tunes. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone, and today we're talking about the folk element, the influence that folk music and folk culture has had on composers throughout music history. When Aaron Copland fused Mexican folk music into his symphonic writing to much success, it became evident how he could make his American music more accessible, and that was to incorporate American folk music into his concert music. So that's what he did. The most famous example of that is the use of the Shaker hymn, Simple Gifts, in the middle of his ballet, Appalachian Spring. This section of the ballet uses the Simple Gifts theme in a theme and variations type format. So the theme is repeated over and over, but each time it's repeated, it's varied, it's put in different sections of the orchestra, in different keys. And here it is, performed by Eric Kunzel and the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra.
Thank you.
So that was the Simple Gifts theme and variation section of Aaron Copland's ballet, Appalachian Spring. We are talking about the folk element on today's episode of Music for Life. We are exploring the impact that folk music has had on composers throughout music history. Aaron Copland drew from American folk tunes to give his music an American feel. This became far more important for Aaron Copland to do, as he was using this method of composition as a means of proving his patriotism and loyalty to America as the Red Scare started to spread through America. His parents were Russian immigrants, so he came under scrutiny as to whether he was a communist or not. But his music proved that he was American through and through. Let's listen to another of his great compositions that features the American folk element. This is Lincoln Portrait, a piece of music for orchestra and narrator which utilizes poignant quotes from Abraham Lincoln's presidency. Copland makes use of two songs or two themes that would have been popular around the time of Abraham Lincoln, so these are tunes that Mr. Lincoln would have been familiar with. One was more of a popular tune, not a folk tune per se, Camptown Races, written by Stephen Foster. Then he also used the American folk tune On Springfield Mountain. It goes like this. He weaves these themes throughout this piece. He uses the first four notes of On Springfield Mountain quite a bit throughout this entire piece. Let's listen to it. Here's Aaron Copland's Lincoln Portrait, performed by the Seattle Symphony Orchestra, Gerard Schwartz conducting, with narrator James Earl Jones. And I'm starting at where the On Springfield Mountain theme enters.
Thank you. Fellow citizens, we cannot escape history. That is what he said. That is what Abraham Lincoln said. Fellow citizens, we cannot escape history. We of this Congress and this administration will be remembered in spite of ourselves. No personal significance or insignificance can spare one or another of us. The fiery trial through which we pass will light us down in honor or dishonor to the latest generation. Even we here hold the power and bear the responsibility.
That's a little bit of Aaron Copland's Lincoln Portrait, narrated by James Earl Jones and performed by the Seattle Symphony Orchestra with Gerard Schwartz conducting. I will have to save the entirety of that for another episode. You are listening to Music for Life. This is KPCG. Aaron Copland made abundant use of the opening motive from the American folk tune On Springfield Mountain in that piece that we just heard. And we are talking today about the impact folk music, folk styles, folk culture, folk melodies have had on composers throughout music history. Aaron Copland was a composer from the so-called modern era who drew from American folk tunes to give his music an American feel and to convince the powers that be that he was not a communist sympathizer, but an American patriot. There was another modern composer who made use of folk tunes, but he is remembered more for doing so in his work as a music educator. With that, let's move into our segment, Classroom Corner, where we explore different methods and curricula for introducing young people to music. That is a choral orchestral masterpiece known as Carmina Burana. It was composed by Carl Orff. What does that have to do with music education? Not so much of itself, but its composer was a major influence in the field of music education. In this segment, we will discuss how folk songs are used in music education, and part of the reason they are used so much nowadays had to do with the work of Carl Orff, a German composer, conductor, and educator. The book he wrote on this subject is titled Orff Schulwerk, meaning schoolwork. It was later revised and adapted into English as Music for Children. It explores the natural behaviors of children, singing, chanting, dancing, playing, and improvising, which form the basis of his theory. This method emphasizes the importance of rhythm, movement, and folk music. The Orff approach encourages the use of folk tunes from many different cultures, particularly those employing a pentatonic or five-note scale. That is because they can be easily accompanied by the Orff instruments, the instruments he favored in the classroom, including pitched percussion instruments like xylophones and glockenspiels, as well as other noisemakers like castanets, maracas, triangles, and conga drums. Another groundbreaking figure in music education who employed folk music in his approach was Zoltán Kodály. We discussed him in another program for his contribution to music education by promoting the solfège method for learning music, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, But he also incorporated folk music into his method of music education. He collaborated with Béla Bartók, collecting folk music from Hungary, Romania, and other parts of southeastern Europe. He included folk and folk-like melodies in his best-known orchestral works, the Hari János Suite, Marasek Dances, and Summer Evening. In terms of the vocal music he wrote, his cultural heritage was demonstrated through the folk-like choruses he wrote and by his arrangements of folk tunes. This is a little bit of his intermezzo from the Hari János Suite, performed by the Cleveland Orchestra under George Sell. You'll hear a unique instrument in this, a cimbalom, or a hammered dulcimer used commonly in the music of Eastern Europe. So that was a portion of the intermezzo from the Hari János Suite performed by the Cleveland Orchestra under George Sell, and that was a composition of Zoltán Kodály. Zoltán Kodály and Karl Orff were two 20th century composers who were also influential in the field of music education, and that's why we're talking about them here in Classroom Corner. And both incorporated folk tunes as a means of teaching young people important musical concepts, developing good musicianship, and instilling a respect for cultural heritage. In Kodály's own words, "The singing of folk songs must form a part of every music lesson, not only to provide practice in them for their own sake, but to maintain continuity and also to awaken, develop, and maintain the sense of relationship between music and the language. For there is no denying that it is here, in folk song, that the most perfect relationship between music and language can be found." And those are the words of Zoltán Kodály. Folk tunes are included in the curriculum of many music institutes today who hold these same values, such as the Organization of American Kodály Educators, the American Kodály Institute, Kodály Summer Institute, Kodály Music Institute, and others. The Orff Institute in Salzburg, Austria, established by Karl Orff in 1961, is dedicated to training music teachers for education in music and dance or movement in schools. Other major institutions offer training in the Orff method as well. The University of Memphis holds the Orff Summer Institute. The American Orff Schulwerk Association offers training programs at 50 universities across the United States. And because folk music is a major element of both the Orff and Kodály methods, it is an element common to both training programs. This has been Classroom Corner. You are listening to Music for Life, exploring the purpose and value of music to humanity's enrichment. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. We are talking about the folk influence, the folk element in fine art music, and how folk style, folk melodies, folk tunes, and folk music have impacted composers throughout music history. And in that last segment, Classroom Corner, we mentioned how Zoltán Kodály worked with a composer named Béla Bartók. Bartók is considered one of the most important composers of the 20th century, and he made extensive use of folk tunes in his music. He not only incorporated folk themes and styles into his compositions, part of his life's work was collecting and notating folk music from various Eastern European cultures, along with Zoltán Kodály, as we mentioned in our Classroom Corner segment. You can hear this folk influence all over so many of his works. Some of his pieces have it explicitly in the title. I remember as a piano student competing with his six Romanian folk dances. But then there are pieces like the one we're hearing right now that don't mention anything about folk melodies in the title, but there are folk melodies and folk-like melodies throughout. This is Bartók's Concerto for Orchestra. It is a five-movement work. Now, the word concerto usually implies a solo instrument and an orchestra, but Bartók said he called it a concerto for orchestra because of its tendency to treat the single orchestral instruments in a concertant or soloistic manner. So here is a little bit of the fifth and final movement, performed by Fritz Reiner conducting the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Thank you. That was Bartok's Concerto for Orchestra, the fifth movement, performed by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Fritz Reiner. And we've been talking about the folk element on today's episode of Music for Life. We've talked about how composers have used folk influences in their compositions. But how does this component affect performers? For that, let's move into our backstage banter segment, where we interview performers on the concert circuit today for their perspectives on music. This is a recording of violinist Kyle Dillingham playing on an album that we produced here at Herbert W. Armstrong College. Kyle is a renowned fiddler who 10 years ago began his own folk band called Horseshoe Road. One of his good friends and colleagues, Peter Marcus, a guitarist in this band, also conducts the Edmund North High School Orchestra. Both these versatile performers talked with me about how their folk and classical backgrounds impact each other. Maybe we could talk first about your training, your background.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go for it, Peter.
I actually got started on the violin because my mom wanted a fiddle player. And I started when I was 4 years old, so part of that Suzuki violin school, which is so strong in the ear training. And it lended itself well to fiddle music. And my teacher herself, she wouldn't describe herself as a fiddler, but she took it upon herself to help me learn some tunes. And then with guitar, I just picked it up just by ear because of that background in the ear training.
Interestingly enough, about 14 years later, Peter and I started making music together, and his mom finally got a fiddle player. I had an interesting start. I was drawn into playing because of my love of Western swing, Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, and
okay.
Heard a lot of that on the farm growing up with my grandpa and found a violin at a garage sale, and my parents didn't really know what to do. I was showing an interest, so they sought out lessons, and I was taking some Suzuki training as well. About a year's worth, and my teacher was hands in the air, did not know what to do in terms of teaching me any fiddle music. But then I found an organization in Enid, my hometown, called Enid Plains Folk Musicians, and they got together once a month. And for just like an informal jam session, bunch of old timers, you know. And I found my home in that group. And through that group, I found a woman named Shirley Landrum, who was a bluegrass fiddle teacher in Enid. And started in with Shirley taking bluegrass fiddle. It was all by ear. She would play and teach me tunes. But at the same time, I was starting up in the Enid Public School String Program as well. So somewhat kind of getting that parallel education through the public school music
program. More traditional
music. More traditional, and then just seriously fiddling over here on the other side.
And my training always was focused on classical training, outside of just learning a fiddle tune here or there.
So you started playing together in high school.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then this group Horseshoe Road, when did that form?
I formed Horseshoe Road back in 2005. But the members of the band have shifted and changed. Some have come and gone. And Peter started playing guitar in 2009, did you?
Thereabouts, 5 or 6 years ago, yeah.
And anyways, my guitarist at the time was taking on more of a full-time role as sound engineer for Tommy Emmanuel. So I called Peter. I said, Peter, you still play guitar?
At that point, Kyle and I, because my professional life as an educator had taken off, and his professional life as a professional performer had taken off, and didn't have time for our lives to meet. So we were pretty much playing weddings and funerals of people we knew.
That's true.
That's true. It was a lot of twin fiddling. We did a lot of that. One of my strongest memories of twin fiddling is when I was buying my violin that I used through the end of high school, all through college, and the beginning of my professional career. And I narrowed it down to two violins that Byron Berline, he's who sold me the violin, he let me take both of them home. And Kyle and I sat out on my front porch for 4 hours in the dark just playing these violins. We'd switch them.
Yeah.
But it's still one of my strongest memories about this, you know, your first question talking about the fiddle and the aural music culture, and that we could just sit there and play and make some incredible ideas that came out of that night when we were, you know, 15, 16 years old that we still use when we play twin fiddles for these friends events.
Yeah, it's true.
And whereas Horseshoe Roads obviously plays some pretty spectacular places and events, give us some of those highlights.
Well, I'd say a big highlight was a few years ago we were selected by the U.S. State Department to do an American Music Abroad tour. And we were in Korea, Taiwan, Burma, and Pacific Rim, Russia. One of the big highlights for me was we were featured artists with the Taipei Symphony Orchestra in Taipei's sort of Central Park. There was like about 6,000 people. About half the program was traditional American music, and then the other half was traditional Taiwanese folk music that we had prepared for the tour. And some of it was doing solo violin with orchestra. Some of it was the band with the orchestra. Some of it was just the band by itself. And there was one really special moment for me where Peter actually, I was doing a piece that was written by Oklahoma composer Callan Clark. And Peter actually guest conducted the Taipei Symphony Orchestra with me playing solo. And there we were having just this amazing, you know, all those circles kind of coming together. Our various education and backgrounds and into a fantastic evening of music.
And that piece titled Normandy was actually first premiered by the Edmund North String Orchestra and Kyle playing solo violin. It was one of the first works written for that genre for Kyle, kind of romance for violin and orchestra. And so it was neat to be able to do this in a full orchestra version and then with a professional orchestra.
So that brought you, you know, taking you around the world. You've worked with even other cultures, folk music. Talk about, maybe Peter, talk about what the classical training does for you when you're playing the folk music, when you're playing, you know, more of the oral tradition.
Oral tradition. Right. I like that mixture of words. Having the classical training, it's tough to say because I started at such a young age and learned the oral tradition, which in our public schools, so many of our students start when they're 11, and it's possible to learn to play by ear. Of course it's possible, but it's much more challenging to learn a language the older you get.
Right.
And so to say that the classical has an influence on my folk or vice versa, I think out of anything, the folk training and the oral training that I've had, if I sit in an orchestra and play violin, it's such a benefit because my ears, I hear something and can play it. I hear the flute. Oh, the flutes have my part, and I just play along with them. So I don't have to be a great reader at music. I do have to be a good reader.
Yes, right.
You are.
But
just on top, it compounds it.
Yes, that's a great way to describe it. It compounds it to say that, you know, I'm reading my music, but being reinforced and really opening up and listening and being very sensitive to all the other musicians.
So the folk influence on you as a classical performer is the heavily trained ear.
Right.
That's what you're talking about.
Listening and adjusting. Right. Constant synthesis. Yeah.
Right. And Kyle, you, when you're playing, like say, playing something more symphonic or traditional in that sense of the word, how is your bluegrass or, you know, your fiddle background impacting the choices you make musically there?
The best way I can describe is I remember when I was studying violin at Oklahoma City University, my teacher was John Arnold, and he would always say, you know, one thing I don't have to work with on you is phrasing, musicality, expression, because it was just such a natural thing. And because from a very young age, like Peter was describing, I was making music. I was performing. So the thing that really, that I find that affects me the most when I'm standing in front of an orchestra, for example, is that I'm not thinking about my stage presence, or I'm not thinking about so much when I'm learning a new piece, how am I going to express this? That part seems to come natural. It's kind of like I'm just trying to get the notes under my finger. But what I've been told is that very aggressive style. I remember when I was, you know, early on playing fiddle, it was often just me playing for, 100 people, you know, acoustic, or I might have a guitar player, and we were often playing acoustic or very minimally amplified, and I remember always having to generate this huge acoustic sound, and I was always hearing more in my head than was being produced just with one or two instruments. And so I remember really developing this very thick style of playing with lots of double stops, and because I was always trying to make up for the lack of instrumentation, and but also this very strong, powerful sound. And I think that's been to my advantage, where my training as sort of a folk player, oftentimes you're having to really punch through and cut through acoustically. And bringing that into a concert hall, I think it's lent itself to maybe just an exciting performance that seems a little more spontaneous. In fact, I had a good friend that attended this very first concert that Peter was talking about with the Edmund North Orchestra, where I premiered Normandy. And I said, "What did you think of the piece?" Somebody had been hearing me play for a long time, and he said, "That's wonderful." He said, "You were improvising the whole thing, right?" He had taken it as that my part, maybe Callan had composed for the orchestra, but I was simply improvising my part and doing whatever. And I said, "No, I mean, every single note is written out." But I think because I've had so many years of performance in a venue where there isn't written score, that even when I've memorized a piece, it comes across as though I'm, maybe just the way I'm playing, that it seems improvised, it seems fresh, it seems new.
Right.
Most of the music I've done in that field has been new music. I've premiered about 8 new works for solo violin and symphony orchestra since 2008.
But you're premiering like written down
pieces. Premiering written down pieces of music.
Right. Concert music is what
concert you music, yeah. You would say, repertoire that could be repeated by other performers, but right. There's an excitement there as well of saying, here's some new music. This is Oklahoma symphonic music.
Right.
Working with Callan in terms of the folk music, we have had various pieces where we've tried to slip that in, like we did a tone poem based on the life, death, and legacy of Wiley Post, and we wanted to encapsulate that fiddling thing, but in a symphonic way. And the Tulsa World critic, music critic, wrote, he said it was as if the soloist was like Paganini, but had been raised in the Appalachian Mountains or something.
What folk music has done for you in terms of performing, like we said, concert music, it's infused a certain spontaneity.
Yeah.
Is what you're talking
about.
Like it's coming right out of you, right at that moment.
Yeah.
Which certainly composers in the past have wanted that spirit, of course. I think all composers probably
to
want
say,
that spirit.
We can really write down so many things, but we're hoping that the musicians will take it to the next level.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
And then Peter, you know, we're here at your school office. You just finished a school
yes.
day, and you're where I see your name tag here says, what is that, 2014
Oklahoma
Teacher
of the Year. Yes.
So that's pretty impressive. I want to end with you and just on this educational angle here, just like how does your experience in a folk group like Horseshoe Road or your musical life experiences playing all the different types of music affect you as an educator?
I think what I'm glad to bring to our students is much of what Kyle talked about is that air of musicality. We talk about mastering an instrument versus playing an instrument. And, you know, you don't ever work the violin. You play the violin or you master the violin. And I think in education setting, we talk so much about mastering it. And so we go through so much technique and drills and things that are necessary vitamins. Mm-hmm. You've got to have the patterns become innately come out of your fingers and arms. What I think this experience working with so many cultures has helped me to relay to our students. But ultimately, it's about play. And what is that balance between mastery and playing our instruments?
Well, thank you so much for your time, gentlemen. I really appreciate you talking
thank
with us.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Ryan. Thank you very much.
You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today we have been talking about the folk element, exploring the impact folk music has had on composers throughout music history. For dessert today, where we hear an example from the popular or folk tradition to end the program, I want to play you something that would probably be considered of the lighter classical or popular style that has a folk element in it. This shows that composers, such as me, are still drawing from folk influences or using folk melodies in their own compositions. With a name like Malone, you may have guessed that I have a great deal of Irish heritage in my ancestry, so I have enjoyed infusing Irish influences and Irish tunes into my compositions. Also, our campus here hosts an Irish dance school whose students have placed at the international level. So when I compose stage productions for our schools, I write the dance music that goes into those productions. Not only do I like to incorporate Irish tunes in my music for personal, ancestral reasons, but also because this style of music is obviously best suited to showcase the dancers on campus in our productions. This was the case for the original musical Jeremiah that we did here. So to end the program today, here's a piece from Jeremiah I called The Temple Gate. It was based on this Irish folk tune called Last Night As I Was Thinking of the Ways of the World. To make it danceable, I put it in the meter for a slip jig, what musicians call 9/8 time, and I also wanted it to have more of a melancholy feel, even though the melody itself sounds like a major or happy key. So I reharmonized it, which completely reimagines this Irish tune, I think. So I hope you enjoy The Temple Gate from our original stage production here at Armstrong Auditorium, Jeremiah, featuring a studio orchestra with flute solos by Parthena Owens and violin solos by Densi Rushing. Thank you. You have been listening to Music for Life. From the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus, I'm Ryan Malone. Thanks for joining me.